city of Bangor put up a holiday tree yesterday. Or at least that's what they were doing when the process started.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, you had spotted it via Facebook Live just yesterday, Paul.
That's right. WLBZ2 had posted a live video via their Facebook page saying, hey, Bangor's putting up its holiday tree, and people lost their minds.
They really did. They really did. As a matter of fact, the comments continued, and if I recall, Paul, you had suggested that WLBZ then changed the way they were referring to the tree on their Facebook page. Is that true?
Yeah, that's right. After all those comments saying, hey, that looks like a Christmas tree to me, and oh my gosh, I can't believe that they're not saying Christmas. This is a war on Christmas. WLBZ2 took down that video and put it back up with the title, Bangor Puts Up Its Christmas Tree.
Wow. Well, let's hope the rest of the country doesn't cave quite as quickly as the folks are responsible for naming a Facebook video. When we hear about situations like this, it makes us turn to the gentleman who joins us on the phone right now, David Niosi. David is an attorney, an author, an activist. He served as the president of two different Washington-based national organizations, the American Humanist Association and the Secular Coalition for America. David, welcome back. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Don. How are you?
I'm doing well, and if I may, happy holidays, sir.
Happy holidays to you.
It seems patently absurd. It's been, how long has it been? It's been at least 10 years, right? I mean, and we can, at least the modern incarnation of this supposed war on Christmas, I think we could probably point our fingers at Fox News and Bill O'Reilly in particular, couldn't we?
You're absolutely right. O'Reilly was the culture warrior, as he called himself, the leading the charge in the defense of Christmas, if you will, in this war of Christmas that he concocted. The funny thing is, back when this first started happening, people went on the Fox website and they found Happy Holidays mugs being sold with the O'Reilly Show logo on them.
Perfect.
So he was deriding those who say Happy Holidays, but he was commercializing it himself.
Right, eager to pocket his portion of the profits for those mugs.
Why not?
Where does this really come from? I mean, is it just that? I mean, could this be looked at as the most egregious example of the commercialization of the Christmas holiday?
Well, I think the whole war of Christmas is closely related to the whole concept of political correctness, if you will,
okay,
and how the right likes to deride those who are quote-unquote politically correct, and many on the right like to proudly present themselves as politically incorrect. Mm-hmm. What it really boils down to is when we suggest that publicly the greeting of Happy Holidays might be better in many contexts, all we're really suggesting is that we should be sensitive that others may not share your beliefs in religion and in culture, and that we're a multicultural society and that we want people to be sensitive to the fact that there are others who aren't celebrating Christmas and that there are other holidays, even if they are minorities. And, you know, to many who grew up not thinking in that way and just assuming that just about everyone celebrates Christmas and that, you know, we're a Christian nation, that seems offensive to ask them to be sensitive to that. It offends them for some reason, and they use it as a tool in their political and social clashes.
We're speaking with David Niosi. David, what is the understood origin of the sort of blanket greeting, Happy Holidays? That was really originally designed as a sort of a way to be all inclusive, wasn't it? We were trying to see to it that we aren't leaving anybody out here.
Oh, sure. I'm not sure anyone knows exactly where the term originated from, but it certainly goes back generations, many generations. to before what we would now call the culture wars. I mean, I guess in some sense there's always been a culture war going on in America, but only the last few decades has it really risen to fever pitch. But the Happy Holidays term predates all that. There was really nothing particularly controversial about it for many, many years. Only in this right-wing view of America, where traditional values supposedly are under attack, did the term "Happy Holidays" become controversial.
We're speaking with Attorney David Neosi. David, the idea that this is directly tied to the sort of a right-wing ideology that flared up in such a major fashion during our presidential election cycle is a little bit concerning, because you begin to wonder what sort of crossover might this have to throw some real difficulties the way of anybody seeking to maintain a very understandable separation between church and state.
Well, I think everyone is trying, or people are trying to digest what just happened in this last election cycle and how it's going to affect American culture and society. It's a big question mark, and nobody really knows, but I think people are certainly fearful for good reason. There's been a lot of signs that the incoming administration is going to be hostile. For example, Donald Trump yesterday tweeted that he wants to lock up and strip citizenship from anyone who burns the flag. Mm-hmm. Now, the Supreme Court and constitutional law is very clear that burning the flag is a free speech, fundamental First Amendment right. Yet, this guy pays no heed to that, just wants to lock people up and strip their citizenship. And it's interesting because if you think about it, flag burning is actually the ultimate political incorrectness, isn't it?
Yes.
If you want to be politically incorrect, there's little you could do more than burning a flag. So these people who hold themselves out as proudly politically incorrect actually take great offense to anything that's politically incorrect that rubs their politics the wrong way. And it's grossly hypocritical, but that's nothing new in politics, I suppose.
Yeah, it really isn't. We continue to see instances crop up around the country directly related to religious holiday displays. And I must tell you, we've been having that conversation with guests who come in and out of the studio. One of them just recently saying to us, as we discussed this holiday tree situation here in Bangor, the idea that this individual, as a member of the Jewish faith, was certainly hopeful that the city would not choose to light a menorah, saying that, hey, you know what, that's sort of a very sacred event. That is a religious act. It's not the sort of thing that municipal or state or federal officials should be engaging in as part of their course of business. But that's not stopping this from going on.
That's a wonderful example. And, it's a great example of how the idea of church-state separation is not a concept that pits secular non-religious people against religious people, or Christians against everyone else. There are many Christians who take great offense to Christian symbols in public areas. They belong in your house, they belong in your church, but they don't belong in the public arena. And this example of a Jewish individual who doesn't want the government lighting a menorah is a perfect example of that. It's not like, just because yours is included, that makes it all right. It's really a question of whether we want the government to be neutral and secular, not anti-religious, but just neutral on religion. And it's such a simple concept, yet 200 years into this republic, we're still trying to get our head around it.
Yeah, why do you suppose that is? Is it because those religious beliefs that individuals have are in many ways more deeply held than their political beliefs or their sense of nationalism. I mean, I got to tell you, after watching this last presidential election unfold, I can't imagine that some of these people have any feelings that are more deep seated than their just unbelievable nationalism. Their yeah. love of country absolutely exudes from their every pore.
Yeah, well, it seems that way anyway. You have to, I hate to sound cynical, but you have to wonder how many of these politicians are just utilizing these things for political purposes. I don't think many of these politicians on the religious right are actually as religious as they hold themselves out to be, but they use religion and church-state issues and nationalism and patriotism as well for their political advantage. It gives them a lot of leverage. So on one hand, you have politicians who are just cynically utilizing these things because they can. And then you do have certainly a sincere public, many members of the public, who do view their religion and their patriotism seriously. And they might be prone to not seeing the importance of church-state separation. They'll see that as perhaps an attack on their religion rather than something that's really more of a step to preserve democracy. It's not an attack on religion at all. So I think there's a susceptible public on one side, and there are cynical politicians on the other side, and it makes for a very ugly scenario sometimes, as we see in American politics these days.
Yeah, it really becomes sort of a perfect storm for foolishness. I have a hard time trying to separate these notions, and I also have a hard time digesting anything that's coming from either side of the political spectrum right now, because it all seems so completely disingenuous. The uproar over Trump's comments with regard to flag burning is a great example, because it's been widely reported that the supporter of a proposed law to jail flag burners was one of the primary sponsors was Hillary Clinton just a few short years ago. That just goes to show that this is really more about using issues, these divisive wedge issues, to your own political advantage, perhaps better than anything else, except maybe the war on Christmas.
Well, I think the proof of that is really the religious rights embracing of Trump. I mean, you know, how the many evangelicals, Jerry Falwell, James Dobson, and many other leading religious right preachers and leaders have embraced Donald Trump as if he is somehow a godsend, literally, to America. It's so foolish. You really couldn't write a fictional story that's more absurd, that this guy made his living with casinos, and you know, there's nothing about his history that suggests he's the least bit pious or anything like mm-hmm. that, yet here they are embracing him. And you know, if that's not cynical, I don't know what is.
You know, also not a whole lot to suggest that he's the consummate outsider that they have liked to portray him as. I mean, they recognized that they weren't going to make any hay talking about what a pious guy he was. Didn't stop him from making those claims. But also the idea that he is some guy from so far outside the Beltway, he doesn't even know where to find it, is pretty preposterous as well when you consider his very cozy relationships with some of the biggest power brokers in D.C., talking about lobbyists and lobbying firms that perhaps hold a tighter grip on what is the America we live in than any elected official in that city.
Yeah, sure. No, he just was a very unique candidate, using social media and just using the media in general. He got the study showed that he got much more free media coverage than any other candidate. He's America's celebrity culture, this reality television star, attracted this mass following, which I guess we shouldn't be too surprised about, but it doesn't bode well for those of us who, you know, seek kind of rational, human-centered public policy, as opposed to this, you know, Twitter storm politics.
Yeah, right, right. David, it seems to make the content of your recent books all that much more pertinent. The volume "Fighting Back the Right: Reclaiming America from the Attack on Reason" is a solid read that I would suggest to anybody who recognizes exactly what has unfolded or seems to be continuing to unfold here in the United States. We need to have more people who recognize the importance of doing away with these religiously based arguments that continue to creep into political discussion, and to be able to put aside sort of the, for lack of a better term, the nonsensical red herring issues that continually get churned up whenever things get a little bit interesting in D.C. You know, if nothing else, Trump has done a wonderful job of saying, "Hey, look, America, squirrel," with the whole flag burning thing, and not a tremendous amount of discussion around some of his proposed cabinet appointments happening at the same time.
Yeah, well, you know, thank you for that endorsement. I appreciate that, and I would just add that, you know, it's really not just religion. We talk about the war on Christmas and all that, but it really comes under a wider umbrella, I would say, of anti-intellectualism.
Yes.
And, you know, it's something that I talk about at some length in the book, this anti-intellectual tradition in American culture. And it's very much alive and well. And I think the Trump presidency, if you will, is kind of a gleaming example of how anti-intellectualism can just take over American society, and we now have at least 4 years of an administration that seems to embrace it.
I'm going to place a link up to your website, David. It's davidneosi.com. We'll put that on our Facebook page, the Pulse AM 620 on Facebook, an opportunity for people to check out both of your books and also a great interview on CTV discussing the role of anti-intellectualism during the course of the U.S. election. Still very pertinent stuff. David Neosi, it's always a pleasure, sir. We appreciate your time today.
Hey, great to be here. Take care, Don.